Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Curz on Film podcast. This week we'll be discussing Xavier Legrand's Custody, and we'll be hearing from one of the film's stars, Denis Ménochet. I'm Sam Howlett, and joining me this week are Campbell A. Campbell.
Hello.
And Stephen Ryder.
Hello.
I couldn't be bothered to think of a funny intro, so I just said your names.
That's all right, that's funny enough.
Yeah, that'll do. So, Custody, which won Best Director and Lion of the Future Award at the Venice Film Festival, follows a bitter custody battle between Miriam and Antoine and the effect it has on their young son, Julian. The characters were introduced in Legrand's short film just before losing everything, and Custody is a continuation of their story. Miriam is played by Leah Drucker, and Antoine is played by Denis Ménochet, who you will have seen recently in Mary Magdalene, Assassin's Creed, The Programme, Grand Central, perhaps best known for the opening scene of Inglourious Basterds as the farmer that gives Hans Lander some delicious milk. And Stephen, you spoke to him.
Yeah, I did. And he was far less intimidating than he is in this film. So it was a pleasant interview, thankfully. Yeah.
Excellent. So this is Denis Ménochet.
Hey, wonderful. Denis, it's great to have you. Thanks for coming along. I have to say that it's quite a menacing performance that you give in this film, so I'm surprised to see that you're such a nice guy in reality, to be quite honest.
That's a compliment.
It was startling. I actually saw the film at the London Film Festival. Yep. It was a late addition to the festival, and it blew me away straight away. After I'd seen it, I realised that I'd actually forgotten to breathe for the last 20 minutes of the film, which hasn't happened to me for a long time. I was so invested in it. But before we get into that kind of stuff, could you tell me a little bit about how you came to the project? Because obviously it was a short film, just before losing everything, 2013, I think
exactly,
that one was.
Yeah.
And how you came to that, and then how you kind of moved on to making the feature.
Well, I come from short films, so after I started working, I just wanted to just give back every year, and every year I wanted to just do a short film for, you know, young directors to just express themselves.
That's great.
And it was in August, my friend Leah, who plays my wife in Custody, called me up and said she was doing this short film and the director wanted me to come along for a couple of days, and because of that rule, I went. And the rest is history.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And when you were making the short, did Xavier, the director, did he know that he wanted to make a feature film out of these characters?
No, he wanted to make three short films.
Okay.
For of the three different stages of those kind of situations. And after the success of the short, which was kind of incredible because he went to the Oscars, he decided to write the long feature, to merge the two last short films into one.
Okay, yeah. So they are basically two short films. Merged.
Not really, but
that was the concept.
The first concept.
Oh, great, great. No, that's amazing. I mean, so obviously you play a kind of an abusive husband, and this abuse happens in kind of multiple ways. Some of it's emotional. I know in the short film it's physical abuse that we kind of are alluded to.
Yeah.
But when you were kind of preparing for this role, obviously you knew you'd have to be working with children.
Yeah.
And some of the scenes in Custody are very distressing scenes. Yeah. How did you go about kind of preparing and rehearsing for those scenes with Thomas Julian, Thomas Gloria, who plays Julian, in the film?
First of all, before I met the kid, I wanted to just extract sort of a behavior of those kind of guys. And so I studied all the interviews of women who were beaten up by their husband, mm-hmm. and in those testimonies you could like extract sort of a common points and behaviors and all that. And then when I worked with the kid, I was kind of concerned, you know, like what's going to happen,
yeah.
and is he going to survive? It's his first film. Is it going to be a good experience for him? So I bought this like small football handball,
yeah,
and I was rehearsing with him my lines, throwing the ball with one of my lines, and he was throwing back the ball, and I could put violence within as a game,
uh-huh.
And I thought it was a brilliant idea, and I was a very Meisner kind of actor, and he didn't care, and he was just like, "Come on, man, let's just make the film together.
Yeah,
what
yeah,
are you
yeah.
doing?" But we became pals because of that, and then after every scene, we used to play and make it a good summer, a good memory for him.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
So the scene that you two share in the car,
yeah,
which is incredibly filmed and incredibly well acted. How much of that was actually rehearsed, or how much of it was spontaneous?
Everything was on the script, but okay. When I punched,
that's the bit I'm thinking.
That was not scripted.
Oh wow!
But we trusted each other that much.
Yeah, yeah, because his reaction is very physical and like incredible to see.
Yeah. Everyone was crying.
Yeah.
Both of us were laughing about it, but all the rest of the crew were crying, which was fun.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Watching the film, it's obviously it comes from a realist tradition, and it's shot in a seemingly kind of simple way.
Mm-hmm.
Although there's a lot of these long takes, especially the one at the party. Mm. Did Javier kind of walk you through exactly how he wanted these scenes to come out? Or did he leave you room?
Visually?
Visually.
No, it was just about the acting, really.
Yeah.
But when once you start talking with him and you realize that everything was already in his mind and he chose the sets, the houses and everything regarding what he had in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So he already had that grammar about how to use images to influence people.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was incredible.
Well, he comes from an acting background himself.
Yeah,
he's
an amazing actor, stage actor.
Have you worked with directors who have been actors before? Or
I worked with Julie Delpy.
Okay, oh wow.
Yeah, and Tarantino is an actor.
Yeah, arguably.
Yeah. Oh well, I think he's an amazing actor.
I think he's got. I think he's a very. He's a character actor, isn't he?
Yeah.
Maybe he'll win a Best Support in one day. So despite the kind of obviously kind of abusive behavior of Antoine in the film, I feel like the script and the direction sets him up to be a complex character, and I think. You know, that's a kind of problematic area that some directors might walk into, because do you want to give this kind of monstrous character a human side? And I was wondering, from your perspective, do you think that Antoine is just kind of a pure monster, or do you think and this is kind of aware of the emotional manipulation that he's doing in the film, or do you think that he is a more complex kind of guy?
I would go with the more complex answer, because we worked with the director, with Xavier Legrand. We really worked hard into not forgetting the human aspect,
mm-hmm.
of being a father separated from his family,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and from the love of his life. You can tell they were in love,
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something we really worked hard on, not to just make him this obsessed guy, like, where is she? And tell me where she is, and all those things. And so that was one thing. But then when it comes to being heartbroken and losing it, using a rifle is never a good option. So I would never say I feel sorry for him.
No,
I don't feel sorry for him.
Yeah, I think that's so important, though, because there's been so many films I've seen where the antagonist is portrayed to just be a monster.
Mm.
And if you show that monster too often, it stops being scary.
Yeah.
But for example, the scene in the kitchen, which I wasn't prepared for when I saw the film.
Yeah.
And I was so tense and so tight that I didn't know how to feel about the way you portrayed the character in that scene. Could you tell me a little bit about that?
That scene?
Yeah, that scene.
It was written as such, but I wanted to... He breaks and he cries, and I wanted to use that again as a mask, as a technique to go and get her back. So he cries like a kid. I really wanted to cry like a kid.
Yeah.
And then there was this thing that came back in all those women's testimony, the vampire metaphor. Came back a lot, and I always found it very interesting and fascinating, because those guys sucked literally the life out of their wives. And I don't know how it came about, but I go around her, and I'm a big guy, so yeah. I'm way bigger than she is. But I put that pose as a vampire again.
Huh.
And I was so happy that came up, because you never plan anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it did come back that way. Yeah. I was very pleased with that.
It's a really hulking kind of hug yeah. giver, and the way that he shoots it from the back with the big shoulders kind yeah. of, and just her tiny little face. It's mm-hmm.
And she doesn't, she tries to hug him and she doesn't.
Yes, she and keeps her hands yeah. by the side, I think.
And then he tries to hug her again as yeah. he leaves.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work.
It's an amazing physical performance, Denis, actually. It's an incredible physical performance, which is, you know, I think is lacking a lot in cinema these days. You don't get a lot of room to work with your entire body, I think.
It was a gift. This part was just, this is why I'm an actor.
Yeah. There's a detachment from the direction that, like, allows you to kind of move around the frame, and it's really, really quite incredible. And I was wondering about Antoine's relationship with his parents.
Yeah.
It's kind of hinted at in the film that's where maybe some of this kind of rage and anger comes from. Did you talk about that with Javier?
I was asking that question all the time, because I needed that background. I needed to know, because of my study about those guys, mm-hmm. I knew it always comes from a broken home.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know the specifics about that situation. And he never wanted to tell me, the director, Xavier. And the night before we shot the scenes with my parents, he sent the three actors, my mom, dad, and I, the story of what happened.
Yes.
And so it kind of makes so much sense, but you can see it in every like blink of an eye, and everyone, you can see all this story, and I will never reveal what it is. But you're spot on when you said that. Yeah.
That's amazing. So there is kind of a story that can kind of build out from these characters. You
completely
think there is
yeah.
a bigger story that we don't get to see. Yeah.
Their story is tragic as well.
Yeah. Do you think there's any chance that Javier might, you know, go back to these characters one day, or do you think this is a story that you guys are finished with?
I don't know. It helped us.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. That's really great. So yeah, do you think that you know, the film does have a universal appeal then? Do you think that when it comes to kind of to England, to cinemas in April, that audiences are going to react to, that British audiences are going to react to this the same way that French audiences would?
Unfortunately, people have, they all have a personal relationship with violence, even more so domestic violence. And we saw it throughout France. When we showed the film, everyone wanted to tell the story about how they relate to that topic.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a bit sad. And I was very impressed by how people survive those things.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and but the film in itself is such a real object of cinema, and cinema conveys, it leads you to such a state of shock.
Yeah.
And therefore, a conversation, when you feel what it does to someone, as much as the film makes you feel, then conversations are happening, and that's a very good thing. And I think it will happen in England as well.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Yeah. I mean, it's as I was saying, when I saw the film at the London Film Festival, because it was a late edition, I actually went into it a little bit blind.
Mm.
And I, you know, although people are probably listening to this and they're getting a good idea for what the story is about now, I think that it's really great to go into this story with as little knowledge as possible.
It is.
So, for people listening, I wouldn't go in any deeper. I'd just go to see this at the cinema and kind of be taken over by it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it truly is a fantastic performance. The whole cast and the director, I think, give top-notch performances. And I look forward to seeing some of your work in Le Grand's in the future, Denis.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you ever so much. Thank you.
Cheers.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
All right, let's get into it then. Custody. So should we start with the opening scene, which is this really long, drawn-out introduction to the characters in this sort of mini courtroom. What do you guys make of this opening?
I really loved its perspective. Just the way it keeps us at a remove while letting the characters kind of state their case and leaves it to us to figure out who we believe. I mean, most people will firmly fall on the side of Miriam, but it's nice that it doesn't batter you over the head with evil.
It's very
pedestrian.
I think it's really easy for, like, once you've seen the film to kind of look back at that and be like, red flag. But I remember watching it for the first time and really not being sure of what was going to transpire between these characters. I didn't know if it was a case of the mother being manipulative. You know, something told me it wasn't, but you almost, that scene is so long and so drawn out and so painful to watch. Yeah. At some point you do start questioning, like, why is this father working so hard to get his child back? Mm. Like, if he is the kind of bad person that the mother's making him out to be, then why is he trying so hard? But I mean, it's all, for me, that scene's all about the framing, right? Like, it's the way that it's such a claustrophobic kind of office. And you've got these kind of, like, you can barely imagine the camera fitting into the room. And you've got this big hulking guy in one corner and this, like, kind of
very small dominion.
Woman in the other. And it's and then the two lawyers facing off against each other. And it really quickly becomes a claustrophobic kind of film. And it never really stops being claustrophobic after that, I think.
It never feels like the camera, like, pulls away from them.
No.
It just kind of, it feels like it's just locked in and it just stays at this really uncomfortable, like, closeness for pretty much the duration of it.
Yeah, it's an interesting decision to sort of place the family at the center of the intrigue. Like, you find out who Anton really is, sort of scene by scene. And it's this whole thing about domestic abuse takes place behind closed doors. You never know what's going on unless you're part of that family. And, you know, victims, they tell their stories in courtrooms, but with no proof, with no evidence. It's all just hearsay. And so we are like the judge in the opening scene, who doesn't come back into the film after the opening scene, but we pretty much are that character from the offset and throughout the film, in a way, that we're looking at this family, hearing these different sides of different things going on, and eventually you're let in at the end.
Well, so that's actually really interesting that you use the phrase behind closed doors as well, because I think that this film is full of, like, closed doors and doors opening and doors, you know, from kind of like the opening scene all the way to the end, it's just a series of doors being closed. And as an audience, we kind of get to see beyond those doors, but we're constantly being reminded that not everybody does. And you can't make kind of judgments about anyone, even if you're a judge presiding over a custody battle, and be right 100% of the time.
Yeah. That is really interesting, because it does, like I said before, it does keep you at this remove, but then it's like the film is making its case as it goes along. It just kind of presents just these different patterns of abusive behavior from really minor tics to just full on kind of craziness. But it's like you said, it's really great that it doesn't set out to kind of just moralize. It tries to present the kind of emotional reality of how these cases unfold for a lot of people, I imagine.
It's dangerous, isn't it? Like making a film where arguably the most complex character in your film is an abusive father, an abusive husband, because he is complex. And as a filmmaker, you don't want to have to make that decision of being like, where it seems as though you're making excuses for this guy, which the film isn't doing.
Not at all.
It's not making excuses for him, but I just think it's really important. And what it does so well is that you come to a point where you don't sympathize with this guy at all.
You understand him.
But you understand, like, why he's acting the way that he is, and you're horrified by it, basically. And that, in turn, you know, means that you can empathize with the family as well.
I like that despite the fact that Menashe basically takes up most of the frame whenever he's on camera, he's not a quote-unquote monster. He's a person who has parents.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him in these states of, maybe I'm I wouldn't call it like sincere vulnerability. He is very manipulative.
Yeah.
But it's very clear that he's made out to be like human and a person that could exist.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I like that it didn't just go the route of him being a barbarian from the off. He's like a very pathetic character.
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
Yeah. He's very kind of sort of schlubby, and he's got this kind of crummy van. Mm-hmm. And his job's like, is it head of security at a hospital? And he's moved jobs to be close to his family.
Doesn't he like live with his parents?
I think he's temporarily living with them.
Yeah.
And he's about to move into a new place. Mm. And he's got a room for Julian.
Yeah, I think pathetic. So enticing. It really is the right word to use in that respect, isn't it? Yeah.
So I think a lot of people have seen parallels between this and Loveless, which we discussed a few weeks ago now on the podcast. And I can see that in about how you've got a sort of very innocent child life being torn apart by a divorce. But that film's very much both parents are at fault. This film is...
It's a very necessary divorce.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I don't know. I think that Loveless is also a very like careful. It's a beautiful film. And it's really well made. It's very like careful film, and it takes its time with things. And
it's a bit more drawn out. Poetic.
Yeah, poetic. Yeah. Whereas this, I think, is just every single scene to me like matters.
Yeah.
In terms of the narrative. Yeah, yeah. Like it propels. It's got such an interesting pace to it, and that adds to what I think is the film's greatest strength, which is just the tension throughout.
Yeah.
Because that's a reflection of the tension that you'd feel if you were in an abusive relationship. You know, you don't know where this guy is or where he's going to come from, and you sense that in the film.
I think that a lot of the most agonizing scenes for me are basically with anyone waiting. When there's a lot of shots that just linger on the boy, maybe just waiting in the car, or waiting for his father to alone, or waiting for his father to respond.
Yeah.
There's a really horrible scene at night when people are just kind of waiting and listening, which is completely and utterly agonizing and feels very very involving and very real, and it's so unsettling because it doesn't take you out. When there's a moment like this, it doesn't take you out of it. It just kind of just leaves you there, and it's absolutely nightmarish.
It really is. I have to admit, we were just discussing, we saw it at the London Film Festival and we were probably in the same screening. I didn't realise that the film was going to be so tense.
Neither did I.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. I thought it was going to be kind of a stark, realistic drama.
I'd say the first 40 minutes are very kind of Dardenne-esque, in this kind of very low budget, not a lot of crazy camera moves or anything like that, not a lot of big performances, very down to earth, very matter of fact, people in courtrooms, people discussing the daily life, but then it does really ramp it up towards the end.
Yeah, everything from when I think Julian goes to visit his father for the first time, and you get to see this side of him that is quite monstrous. Everything after that becomes like, it's incredibly tension filled. And I think it's a huge strength to the film. I didn't experience anything else like that at the festival that year. So
I think it's down to that kind of claustrophobia as well. It's such a small, it feels every space that the film takes place in is so small. Like a lot of shot, basically, it just feels like the camera is pressing Julian up against like the car window, and it just feels like you're trapped in a lot of these spaces. And I feel that this small scale just kind of makes everything feel all the worse. Yeah. And it's just interesting how still like everything is.
It's a very still film. I think the only moment in the entire film that's got any kind of like vivacity to it, like a real kind of sense of style, overt style, is the party scene, which has that long take that's going between all the characters.
Yeah, the most tense version of rolling and... What's the song called?
Rolling in the River?
Rolling in the River.
Yeah, I think we've all heard it a million times, but I have no idea who wrote it or who
I'm going to guess that's what it's called.
Is it Tina Turner? She doesn't sing it like Tina Turner.
No. She's very good.
No, she isn't, but it's her birthday.
It's stressful.
It's very stressful.
But that scene is manages to be, you know, stylish. Although it's not as claustrophobic as every other scene in the film, it's still so kind of like filled with this air of like... urgency
something bad
is about to happen. That's the key, I think. Something bad is about to happen runs throughout the whole film. Yeah. And in a lot of ways, the best films for me get you to empathize with characters that you wouldn't usually empathize with. Like a woman in an abusive relationship. And this film does it so, so well. By the end of it, you feel like you've been through the things that she's been through. And that's just fantastic, I think. Fantastically done. And well researched, too, like by Legrand.
So let's talk a bit about Minache then, because I think he's the actor you remember the most from the film. He's got the biggest role in terms of what he has to do. And it's a shame that foreign language films don't get like Oscar attention in terms of acting. Because I think this is a really Oscar-y role for him.
Mm.
If this was an American film and he was an American actor, I think this would be right up the front, a front runner for best actor or something. Mm-hmm. He's incredible.
He is. Yeah.
He's just got this glowering presence the whole time. You feel like he's just a time bomb. They're not very overt performances by anyone involved, but I think he does a lot to... he has these kind of two sides to him where one's this mask of politeness and civility, and then it just kind of starts peeling back across the whole film. And he's really good at very subtly implying that something is wrong with his character. I mean, we know this much already, but it's just... he's very good at just slowly revealing his true nature, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. And I think he is the center point of the film in terms of the performances. I think a lot of the other actors play off him.
Yeah.
And because of his kind of intensity and his physicality, it makes it easier for... what's the actress's name? Sorry?
Leah Drucker.
Leah Drucker. It makes it so much easier for Leah Drucker to be kind of... feel like imposed upon, especially when he visits the apartment for the first time, which is such a
terrifying
scene. It just feels as though you look at him and you look at her and you think it's not going to take much for her to kind of feel intimidated.
I like as well how stripped back everything is, because again, talking about Loveless is a film which is like layers upon layers of allegory and metaphor and it's like social commentary. I didn't get any of that from this.
I've only
seen it once.
Other than this is a film about how we don't do enough to stop.
Yeah, this film is literally about what it's about. Yes, everything's at the front. It's not hiding. It's not hiding anything away. It's not making you look for anything. It's just shouting at you and like throwing it at you. Mm-hmm. But you're quite, but not in a bad way. You're very happy to have this thrown at you and to watch this.
Yeah, and it's so tightly like constructed.
Yeah,
that at no point are you questioning any of the characters' decisions.
Yeah,
like every decision. The daughter, the mother, the son make is a sensible decision.
Yeah,
you completely understand why they're doing what they're doing as well. We haven't really talked about the daughter as well because I find her arc so interesting because it's not absolutely explicit what is going on with her. We just kind of get this snapshot and you get the implication that she's just done, wants to get out of here.
Yeah.
She's got that boyfriend with the worst...
Oh, the rat tail.
Oh, God.
Oh, my goodness.
It's
that's Padawan.
I had no idea what was happening.
I kept forgetting it was there and then you'd see it just hanging over his shoulder.
It looks like it shouldn't be there. Like, no. He needs to brush it off and it would just fall off.
I wished. Oh, my God. It was so distracting. But the stuff with the daughter, Josephine... It was really understanding because it's not like she's not this kind of sweet, innocent, like not sweet, innocent Julian. She's kind of a very frustrated, angry, just really restless teenager. And you can kind of see how the stuff with her parents has just thrown her off center. Mm-hmm. So we get these kind of insights, but it doesn't. The fact that it's just kind of a subplot is really interesting to me because you could make a lot more out of it, but I like that it's just this kind of undercurrent.
And it almost feels like red herrings may be kind of it's not a negative term sometimes, but with her, especially after the party, with the final scene, there's that misdirection of like, where is he going to turn up? Is he going to come after her or is he going to come after Julian? Yeah,
and there's the scene where she's in the bathroom.
Yeah.
And... am I right in that she's having a pregnancy test?
Yes.
Is that what's going on?
You're right. I'd forgotten about that scene,
and it's
actually
never spoken about or touched upon again.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, this is how he's going to... Another thing he's going to... I don't know. It's going to impact it somehow.
Because they talk about his possessiveness over her and his distaste with her having a boyfriend.
Yeah.
And it just seemed, and you have this subplot of her basically quote unquote acting out.
Yeah.
But it's nice that it doesn't moralize or disdain her for doing any of these things.
Oh, yeah,
it's just
you're absolutely right. I mean, we haven't touched upon the fact that the film is actually based on a short film that Legrand did.
I didn't know this.
What was it called?
So it is Just Before Losing Everything.
Yeah. So which is 20 minutes, half an hour?
It's about 20 minutes, half an hour, and it's the same actors, the same characters, and it's about when Marianne first leaves Antoine.
She makes the decision to leave him,
and it's another, I think, from what I understand, it's another sort of tense thriller of her running, hiding from him, and he follows her to work, and he doesn't realise that she's leaving, and it's sort of...
So very similar, I mean...
It's... What's interesting is that, you know, in the Custody cinematic universe, it's, you know, this is a sequel to that short film.
It is, yeah.
Because it's not like it's a remake of the short film. It's not like, you know, Whiplash, I think, is also based on a short film with similar characters, and that's an expansion of that. This is a follow-on from that film.
Yeah, that's strange.
Which is really strange and really interesting.
Yeah. And he must have really believed in these characters.
Yeah, and clearly you don't have to have seen the short film. Mm. Be interesting
it's a very
to
different
watch the
film
short
without
film.
That. It's a very different film without that information as well. Not because it's like it's a mystery as to whether or not this is the dad is a bad person, but it's a very different perspective that you're coming into the film with.
Yeah, that you're not figuring things out as you go along anymore. Yeah. You know very well what's going on.
I imagine like if someone's seen that short film and then starts watching Custody, they'd just be screaming at these judges.
Come on! Yeah. I thought it was especially weird as well when Samuel L. Jackson turned up after the end credits. It's really strange.
Whoa,
oh, God.
Age of Antoine.
Yeah, Age of Antoine. Yeah, great.
Oh, stop.
No, but I'm really interested to see what Legrand does next, and he is an actor in his own right.
He is,
which I asked Minichet about, which you can hear in the interview, and I think that definitely shines through in the film. He knows exactly where these guys should be and exactly what they should be doing, the blocking, the performances. It's all very much like talked about. You feel like these guys have had lives outside of the frame. He knows what he's doing with these characters, and I am very intrigued to see what he does next. Is he going to be one of these kind of young French directors that has this big breakout film and then kind of disappears and ends up making kind of like French films in the mainstream for the rest of his career, or will he kind of be a festival favourite at Cannes, you know?
Yeah,
who knows?
Intrigued, but
I'm very
interested
to see.
He's definitely, I mean, Venice Film Festival seems to think he's one to watch. They have dubbed him the Lion of the Future.
Awesome name.
Which could be in this, you know, Custody CU.
Yeah. Yeah, easily.
Antoine Man?
No.
I preferred Age of Antoine.
Yeah, let's stick with Age of Antoine for now.
Age of Antoine.
Let's get ahead of ourselves.
Okay.
I and Miriam.
We haven't spoken about Julian much. Julian is kind of, although we said like Antoine is the one you talk about, Julian is the centre of the film. And he's often the centre of many shots as well. He's sort of between people and you're right in the centre of the frame.
They got a really great performance out of that boy.
Yeah.
He was really, really great.
And his name is Thomas Gioria.
Yeah, he's fantastic. You have to have a kid who is in some ways kind of really vulnerable, but also has like this bit of strength to him as well. And he's the way he cares about his mum and he lies in order to protect his mum is actually really moving. That even at his age, it's very sad that at his age he already knows this kind of like darkness.
Yeah,
you know,
he kind of talked his way around it really well. It was really heartbreaking without, you know, beating you over the head with it. And I think this is where, because there's not really, apart from that one song, there's not really a soundtrack or anything. No. It doesn't steer your emotions anywhere, and it's all left on Thomas. It's all left on him to just convey this this like deep sympathy, and he's really good.
He's really good, isn't he?
Yeah,
really,
great.
Really great.
Yeah.
So I mean, it must be so difficult to work with a child actor and with this kind of,
especially
narrative.
In this. Yeah. Oh god.
I mean, Menashe talks about it in the interview that we just listened to, but I can only imagine that, you know, they had extensive conversations with this kid about how to deal with a father and how to deal with a an abusive relationship, and they must be difficult conversations to have. So, you know, all credit to Legrand and Menachet and Drucker, who must have worked with him quite extensively.
That's the camera kind of the camera loves him. No, what really interested me was a lot of the shots of Julian when he's in his father's car, and it's kind of just from the outside, just of him looking out the window, and I think there's just this kind of sense of longing to get the hell out of there, really makes you feel for this character, which I just thought were really good. That's just all I wanted to say, and it lingers for so long as well.
Sure. For me, I mean, it is a fantastic film, and I hope people go to see it. It's understated,
very understated,
you know, and not a pleasant night out.
No, it's not easy,
but brilliant. Yeah. Really, really well made.
Iron Man, Ashe. I think the best thing, one of the really great things the film does, is it blends like the social realist drama with a suspense thriller, which is not easily done at all. Mm. This blend of two almost opposite genres, and I think it does it seamlessly.
Teeters on the brink a few times of headed into like almost horror film territory. Yeah, pulls it back.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so that is Custody, which is out in cinemas now. And as always, we want to encourage you to let us know what you think of the films we discuss. So we've got a few reviews this week to read out. A few weeks ago, we spoke about Isle of Dogs, and it's still in cinemas and it's really, really popular. You guys both seen and liked Isle of Dogs?
I loved it. Yeah.
Mostly liked it.
Okay. Well, David Laurie, who is known on Twitter as @CaveOfFilms, says, "Steely, unexpected, almost alarmingly idiosyncratic, Anderson's grown-up stop-motion odyssey showcases all of his hallmarks but feels like a departure too, inventive and intellectual, but with every exquisite piece in its perfect place."
I'd agree. It's an exquisite film. I mean, absolutely. I went to see the exhibition that was on at the Strand. And
so did I.
Yeah, when you see those models, you're kind of amazed by how intricate the film is.
Yeah, it's kind of his usual sense of control. I was just surprised at how dark...
it does get dark.
Yeah, they ran out of ramen when I got there, though.
Oh, what a shame.
That is dark indeed.
I didn't love dogs that day. And last week, we spoke about 120 beats per minute. And Sam Alexander said, "I fell in love with 120 BPM yesterday for so many reasons, and I'm still in a daze thinking about how perfect it was." Pretty much agree with that as well.
Can't wait to see it.
A perfect film is hard to come by, yeah. But BPM definitely elevates itself to that level in so many ways.
Yeah.
Again, another very difficult watch, but worthwhile every step of the way.
120 BPM is still out in cinemas as well, and is also available on Curzon Home Cinema. And I spoke to the writer and director Robin Campillo, so you can go back and listen to last week's show to check that out. And as ever, let us know what you think about any film we've recently tackled, and we can read out your review. You can let us know on Twitter, or you can email podcast@curzon.com. That's goodbye from Stephen.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Campbell.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me. Thank you very much for listening.